Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion and delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I want you to know that Christian civilization is under attack today. There is a conspiracy against God and against Christianity, and there are organized efforts to destroy it. And you can see them every day on television. You can see them in the court decisions against prayer and God and the Ten Commandments in our schools. These things didn't happen by accident. It is part of this widespread conspiracy against God, and it took place because we had people within our Supreme Court who worshipped a different God. And they were the ones who, back in the 1960s and 70s, passed all the legislation which we accept as constitutional today, and it isn't. It is part of an organized effort to destroy Christianity, which is the very foundation upon which our freedom is based. Well, this evening, we have one of my very, very special guests, and that is Bob Chapman from the International Forecaster. And we're going to be talking about what's going on financially in the world, but of course what's happening financially is simply a reflection of what's happening to the moral standards of our society. And of course, once you get to a situation where you have no foundation at all as far as your money is concerned, why, you have a society where anything really goes. We have no standards. We've turned our backs on absolutes, and at one time money was an absolute. It was worth something, but no longer. Hi Bob, how are you doing? Bob Chapman, are you there?
Yes, it seems to be cutting in and out.
All right, fine. Well,
I don't know why. But,
all right, fine. Well, I can hear you fine. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
All right, fine. Well, I just was reading your latest forecaster, and, you know, of course, you comment on the fact that we see the stock market going up. We see the price of gasoline going down, and isn't it just wonderful, right before the election, that these things should happen? Isn't it a coincidence, or is it a coincidence?
Well, we predicted that the price of oil would go to $60 a barrel, and the price of gasoline would go to $2.50 about a month ago, and at that time, oil was around $73, and gasoline was over $3. And it's turned out that way for the very reason that you just cited, and that is that they're in preparations for an election, and that election is going to be a very difficult one for incumbents, and particularly the Republican Party. And there are other things that have been prepared, the increasing value of bonds, the new high in the stock market based upon nothing but hot air, the suppression of commodity prices, and also the suppression of precious metals. And the one thing that they hadn't planned on, I guess, and that is the terrible scandal that's now raging through Washington and the Foley affair. And,
well, don't you think, though, the Democrats really wanted to bring that out at this time, sort of like an October surprise?
Could be, but I really don't know, because there are so many members of Congress in both parties who are involved in that sort of thing that I think that this particular case has been held under wraps for over 5 years. And I think that it has not been exposed because there are so many others who are involved in similar things.
Well, I think it's just strange that it came out at this time and really is going to, I think, hurt the Republicans, you know, quite a bit. Of course, I have no truck for either party. They're all controlled by the same people. They're all big spenders. They're all, of course, violating their promise to uphold our Constitution. They're all in favor of the war, and they're all working to destroy America. Well, Bob, go right ahead and pick up the story.
Well, that's why we've been telling the subscribers to the International Forecaster that we believe that they should, with minor exception, get rid of the people who are currently in office, just clear the decks. And there's been so many things that warrant this, just particularly recently we had the Torture Act passed and then the Warrantless Spying Act passed, and even though they have passed a bill for surveillance in the border, it doesn't specifically name a barrier or a wall, and it's not properly funded and won't be funded. And I think that's just a sop to the public, because I don't think anybody in Congress has any intention of building a wall, and if they were to use electronic surveillance, it would be a couple of years away. So
no, I think
the American people are getting conned at every corner.
I think it's just a matter of perception, but has very little to do with reality, and you're absolutely right. They authorized some sort of a barrier, but didn't put up any sufficient money to do it. In fact, there's no stipulation that the money they authorized would be spent for the barrier. And, you know, I believe that they're deceiving the American people. I believe that they don't want to stop illegal immigration, because their real purpose is this merging of America, the United States, with Mexico and Canada. But they can't tell the American people that. Why, they might be upset at the thought that we have people in Washington, D.C., who don't believe in our Constitution, although they've sworn to uphold it, who don't believe in American sovereignty, but they're really dedicated to this idea of a one-world government, which will mean the end of America as we know it. Would that be a fair statement?
It certainly is.
All right, fine. Well, let's talk a little bit. I was just reading your latest issue of the Forecaster, and you're talking about really what's happening to the M3. And for our listeners out there, the M3 is an increment of money. It's something that the economists come up with. It really tells us what the government's doing as far as creating new money and credit. And then, of course, this is going to influence what's going to happen to our economy about a year and a half down the line. What are they doing with M3? Do you have any pretty good idea?
Well, first of all, it's a combination of money and credit. Secondly, they did away with it. Thirdly, we publish an estimated M3.
All right, you hold that thought for just a minute as we bring our other stations right back online here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and the government stopped publishing M3, which is the figure that tells us about money and credit and bank credit that's out there in the economy, and that is, of course, what drives the economy. And they suddenly said, oh, it's just too expensive to publish these figures. We've been doing it for umpteen years, but we can't do it anymore. It's too expensive. And the truth of the matter is they don't want people to know what they're doing. They want to keep it secret from the American people. Like to keep everything else secret, but fortunately, Bob does track this M3 figure. And, of course, you want to explain to our listeners what you found. You point out that really M2 seems to be increasing at a lower rate than it has in the past. Is that right?
Slightly so. But if you move M2 up 150%, you'll come up to something on the order of 11% growth in money and credit. And that's a rule of thumb. We also have our own figures that we put together, and we come up with 9.4%, but you have to add some extraneous numbers into that, and you come up with close to 11%. So money and credit is growing at 11%, which is a hyper rate. We're not the only ones who are doing that. All of Western Europe, Australia, and a number of other countries are doing the same thing. And the reason they're doing that is to keep their economies afloat, because had they not done that, their economies would have swooned, they would have slowed down and gone into recession. And at the same time that they were doing that, over the past year and a half to 2 years, they were increasing interest rates. And the increase in M3, money and credit, neutralized or offset that increase in interest rates. The big question here now is, because of the tremendous debt that's outstanding, and both corporate and by consumers, that debt has become onerous. And the way that many people in America, particularly the consumers, have been financing their continued lifestyle is by pulling equity out of their homes. Well, the value of homes is dropping, so in the coming years, they won't be able to do that. And so the question is, will the public and American business want to, or will they be able to, continue with this usage of credit by building it ever greater? I don't know. We won't know until we get there, but we know that the money and credit has been supplied, and we know that that possibility exists. The flip side of that is that if they do not take advantage of that credit and that extra money that's being put into the system, then the system will turn into a depression. And there's nothing more frightening to a Keynesian economist than deflation. And once it starts, you can't stop it. And I believe that eventually that's going to happen, but how long that's going to take remains to be seen.
Well, now, of course, you've said that it usually about a year and a half after they begin to cutting back on the M3 figure. That's this vague figure they don't want us to know about a year and a half after they cut back on that. Then we'll begin to see this reflected in the economy and in the shrinking economy. Have they really started cutting back on M3 yet? Are they still simply pumping out money to keep the good times and credit to keep the good times going?
Well, there was a period during the month of August where it slowed down a bit and dropped off probably about 3 or 4 basis points. But in September, it picked up again. We're looking at weekly increases in commercial credit to banks from the Fed, and in the order of an average of about $40 or $50 billion a week. And so that's still hyper. I know that there's a diminution in the money being borrowed to finance real estate because the sale of homes is dropping in number and inventories are building. But still, the credit on the other side of the menu is still very, very high. And so until we get further figures, we won't know how much damage the lessening of demand for money in the real estate arena has affected the overall amount of credit that's available and usage by those users. Will commercial borrowing offset that? We don't know yet. We're going to see, and these are the things that I have to look at in order to make that future decision as to how long inflation is going to last and whether the trick that they're using here is actually going to work. Quite frankly, I don't think it will.
All right, fine, but the whole world is doing exactly pretty much the same thing.
Yes, they are. And there, and so when you see that, Dr. Stan, you know that this is all coordinated. And that's very, very important. Most people on Wall Street don't put that together. They just look at their own economy, the U.S. economy for the most part. And even if they look at foreign economies, they don't put together the syndrome of everybody increasing money and credit by 9 or 10 or 12%. Some of these countries, like Russia, you're looking at something like 40-45%. I can't remember the number, but it's extraordinarily high.
But of course,
and there are others like that. Now, Russia says they're going to cut back, and they're in an excellent foreign exchange position, and they probably can fix that up okay. But there are other nations that don't have that luxury.
Well, now, of course, isn't this highly inflationary when you're increasing the money that rapidly?
It certainly is, and we're going to have inflation, as you said, in referring to the international forecaster, for at least another year and a half, because they haven't slowed down on anything yet. And if people aren't taking the money to use it, they're going to give them even more.
Well, of course, you know, the thing is, you point out that there's only about a minus 0.5% savings rate. In other words, people are not saving. In fact, they're even going behind on their savings. But, of course, why would anybody want to save with an inflationary rate like we have? You put it in the bank, and you're going to lose 10% a year simply on the value of that currency. Why not spend it, right? Try to save it, you know, in such a situation.
Well, that is a logical viewpoint, and you're right, and people do think that way. But it even goes further than that. There's been tremendous social changes, and most people have not had a bad day in their lives. And so they just continue to spend money, and they don't care where it comes from or whether they have the ability to pay it back if they borrowed it, which is usually the case. And they just keep on going on their merry way. And so whereas people in the 30s, 40s, 50s, and 60s, and 70s, and even 80s were conscientious about that, people today are not.
Well, I think they're in for a big surprise. Certainly Ben Bernanke recently, the head of the Fed, was commenting that in the year 2008, some of the baby boomers are going to begin retiring early. Take early retirement, they'll be 62 years of age and entitled to Social Security. And, you know, it's not going to take very long before, I mean, we have a real crisis in Social Security and Medicare. And he's talking, you know, about having to almost double federal income taxes, you know, to meet the requirements here in a few years, or either that or dramatically cut back on Social Security and Medicare. And neither one of those is a very good alternative for the politicians.
Well, first of all, I think they should move the age up. Since it was instituted in June of 1935, number one, all the money that's been put into Social Security has been spent. There is none. So it's pay as you go. Secondly, the solution really is not allowing people to collect Social Security at 62 or now at 66 or 7. They should move it up to 70 or 72 years of age. And people are just going to have to work longer. One of the things that complicates that is today, only 19% of Americans have pensions. And I believe because of recent legislation, that's going to be under 5% within the next 3 or 4 or 5 years.
You're talking about pensions in addition to Social Security.
Yeah, as in addition to, which means that 80% of Americans, and we'll have to discount people who work for the government, so let's say 75% of Americans have no retirement at all except Social Security. And so if that's the case and they don't have any money saved, which we know that's the case because we're looking at a minus 0.5% savings by people, that means they've got to work until they're 70 or 72.
Well, because I think
anything complicated about that.
And what's really so tragic is that we have a two-tiered society. If you work for the government, you're part of the bureaucracy, you're going to get a pension. If you work for your municipal government, state government, federal government, you're going to get a pension. You're going to get good health care. They're going to look after you. But for the people who pay the taxes, who are really keeping this thing going, why, of course, they're gutting the very essence of destroying our manufacturing. You point that Whirlpool is moving out of the country, simply another major manufacturer. And pretty soon we'll have very little, if any, manufacturing here other than what they can contrive for military purposes. Go right ahead, Bob. We got about 30 seconds.
I think one of the factors that people leave out of this equation is a social factor. And I think that's going to be very large here shortly.
All right, fine. We'll discuss that when we get back here in just a couple of minutes. But, ladies and gentlemen, America's in real trouble financially. Most people don't understand what's happening. They don't want to think about it, but believe me, we're in real trouble. So go right ahead, Bob.
Yeah, we've got 30 million illegal aliens in the country, and the real unemployment rate is over 13%. And that's going to start to get worse. Our president tells us that this past month the Bureau of Labor Statistics said we increased jobs by 51,000. That's not very good, because the last 3 months that the numbers have been about the same, especially in view of the fact that the numbers are bogus in the first place. We actually lost 40,000 jobs last month, and so if you take the 51,000 that they didn't create, and you add 40,000 that they actually lost, we're behind the eight ball for about 91,000 jobs for the month. And the 4.6% unemployment figure is totally bogus as well. Unemployment only counts people who are within the system. If you've received the maximum benefits of unemployment, if you can collect them and it's over, you drop out of the system. So we have millions of people who are over 40 years old that are essentially unemployable because nobody wants them. And they don't want to pay the benefits. They don't want to do this or that. And people over 40 have experience, so they might get $20 an hour, and they can hire somebody very young for $10 an hour to do the same thing. And that's how, incidentally, corporations have been continuing to increase their earnings besides using offshoring of their corporations and the distribution of jobs overseas. And so the combination of the two of them leaves you with a loss of something in the vicinity of 5 million jobs over the last 6 years. And so that's what's going to lead to social implications, because as we go forward and we go into recession and this hyperinflation comes into play, more and more people will be unemployed, and then they'll start losing their homes because the value is falling, and at the same time they're very much in debt, so they're liable to lose just about everything and end up on the street. And that's going to create a very volatile situation, along with the massive amount of people who are in the country who are not supposed to be there. And the people from other lands don't share our culture, nor our heritage, and they believe that we owe it to them, them being here in America. And so I expect that we could have two things going on at the same time, a revolution and a civil war. And I think we could get to that.
Well, I think I was very interested in the point that you pointed out that corporate profits overall have really been going up regularly for 17 consecutive quarters. In other words, the corporations, many of which, of course, are doing the producing overseas, are really doing fairly well, aren't they?
They are, and most of them are well-funded. But on top of that, they're doing tremendous amounts of borrowing because the cost of money is still pretty low. You have a prime rate of 5.25, and by historical standards, that's still very, very low. I know it's up from 1%, but that's pretty cheap. Now, were the rates to move up another point or 2 points, then we'd be looking at...
Hold that thought right there, Bob. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Bob is simply pointing out that, you know, that the corporations, many of our major corporations, are doing very well. That the overall average corporate profit has gone up considerably every quarter for the last 17 quarters, so that they're making a lot of money. Furthermore, Bob points out that the corporations are borrowing a good deal of money now because overall, with the prime about 5.25%, money is relatively cheap, so they can borrow money at that price, and then of course they can invest in it. I put in more plants, things like that. Plants, of course, in China or Thailand or south of the border in Mexico, places like that. But they're really not investing in the United States, are they? At least most companies are not.
Well, yes, some of them are. They began that probably about 2 years ago. Up till that time, the previous 4 years, they had not. I think that what happens here, the larger corporations collectively and simultaneously, deliberately, expand their borrowing and expand their use of money within the society on a cooperative basis. And what happens is the middle tier of business and the smaller businesses follow, and so they are in the process of using that money now that's available at reasonable to cheap rates. Another increase of a point or 2 points in the interest rate would change that. And that brings us back to, well, will they continue to borrow money and credit because it's available? Another facet to this also that's important, and it leads into this, is if the Fed does not continue to raise interest rates, and if they lower them, the dollar will just fall out of bed. And if the dollar goes down, inflation goes up big time. And if the dollar goes down, people who are foreigners who hold our dollars are not going to really want to invest them in the United States, like in Treasury paper or agency paper. Agency is Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, et cetera. And if that stops, the dollar will sink even deeper. The dollar's around 86 on the dollar index, which is the seven major currencies versus the dollar, the euro being about half of that. And if 80 is broken, which is a long-term trend on the dollar index, it'll free fall to 55. And we'll see another 35 to 50% decrease in the value of the dollar against major currencies. And so there's so many factors entering into this, that you have to look at. It's just like a juggler with a whole bunch of balls in the air, and can he keep them up there? This is what the Keynesians at the Fed and in the Treasury Department are doing. And at the same time, we have a government politically that becomes more and more militant versus its citizens. And those acts I cited earlier in the program are the acts of a corporatist fascist police state. And if all of this breaks down during a time when government moves forcefully against the people, then you're going to have some real problems.
All right, fine. Well, I think that we live in really very, very uncertain times, and I think that, right now things are really not too bad. I think the average person is doing fairly well, but I think that there's some dark storm clouds on the horizon, and people have to understand that we're totally uncharted waters economically, because, of course, if they raise the interest rates, why, of course, that will have a real dampening effect on the economy. If they lower the interest rates, it'll destroy the value of our currency. And they're really in a sort of a lose-lose situation, aren't they?
Absolutely. They passed the Rubicon back in 2001, and there's no way back. There's no way back, and they think they're going to be able to inflate their way out of it. And you know something? No, they know they can't, because they've tried this time and again for the last 1,000 years that we have records on. I would think that it probably goes back more like 3,500 years. The people have been pulling this and not getting away with it. I mean, look at ancient Babylon just as an example.
Well, we certainly know what happened in ancient Greece. We know what happened in ancient Rome, and there's no reason to think that it won't happen here. In fact, in Nambia today, a $100,000 note will get you about, well, it'll get you a loaf of bread. A $100,000 note for a loaf of bread? That's the end result of runaway inflation. Thank you. Well, this is Arthur Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening, Bob Chapman of the International Forecaster, and just commenting that in Zimbabwe, in Zimbabwe, $100,000 note, whatever they're using, what their increment is, will get you a loaf of bread. And that is the government that we brought into power. That's the tragedy. The Americans forced that government on the Rhodesian people who didn't want the government of Mugabe, who was a known communist, Maoist, and yet, of course, we insisted they put him in, guaranteeing the stability of their country. Henry Kissinger went on television and promised the people there that if they would simply allow Mugabe to come to power, we would stand behind their government. And, of course, you know, Henry Kissinger's word, and $5 will get you a cup of coffee almost any place in America.
Except well, you're right. I lived in Rhodesia for 3 years, and it was before that. I went in the early 1970s. And after having lived there, I knew Mugabe quite well. I met him in prison. The prison was not too far from my home, which was actually, the prison was in the middle of the city on Borrowdale Road. And I got to know him quite well. He was Jesuit trained, and he was a very, very bright man. And a very bitter person. And he turned into an absolute monster. And, of course, they destroyed the economy, and the people have left by the millions going mostly to South Africa, the black people. And out of a half a million white people who are there, I think there's 30,000 left, if there's that. And the same thing is actually going on in South Africa in a slow, methodical way. A million South Africans have already left, and over time more will. And, you know, all of the work that was done in Africa over a few hundred years has been destroyed. And I don't see it coming back, and I don't think anybody's going to try to recolonialize or colonize or help them, because they have a proclivity to going towards extreme socialism or Marxism. And I think Africa, is, no matter what they do, is doomed.
What a tragedy, because Rhodesia was a wonderful country, as was South Africa, because I was there just about the same time that you were in Rhodesia. I was living and teaching in South Africa. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Bob Chapman. And so this is the time when I would ask, if you're out there in the listening audience, you have a question for Bob, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But, Bob, would you like to tell our listeners how they can get in touch with you or subscribe to the International Forecaster?
Yes, they can call toll-free, 800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. We have a site on the internet, and that address is theinternationalforecaster.com. The International FORECASTER.com. And we publish twice a week by email and twice a month in hard copy. And the publication is about business, finance, economics, and social and political issues all over the world.
Well, it's a fascinating thing, and I look forward to getting it. We're getting it twice a week now instead of once a week. And still, there's an awful lot to read there and a lot of information you're just not going to get elsewhere. And I'm looking at my latest copy. It's all marked up, as I always do, to call our attention to certain specific things that people have to understand, and that is that the housing market is beginning to contract across the country. A lot, some places the prices have not fallen precipitously, but you point out that in certain areas the prices are down 10%. But certainly the houses are not selling anywhere near as much as they did before. Now, why would this be when the interest rates have really not gone up? Do you think they've sort of created this aspect of fear in people's hearts? Or why are we seeing such a dramatic contraction in the real estate market when they really have not raised the interest rates as much as we feared?
Well, almost 70% of Americans own homes. And how this housing boom was promulgated was not only by low interest rates, very abnormally low interest rates that hadn't occurred since the 1920s and 30s, but also by loosening standards by which one would qualify and creating loans such as adjustable rate mortgages, option mortgages, interest-only mortgages, and that allowed people who really shouldn't have had homes to have them. And these people come in at the bottom of the market, so to speak, and bought the less expensive homes, allowing people in a rung above them to move to a better location, a better home, a bigger home, or expensive home, and they pushed everybody higher. And in came the speculators, and they were buying two homes or 25 or 50 homes before they were built and speculating that they could sell them at a profit in a short period of time. And so you had this feeding, this abnormal feeding. The other side of the equation is very simply saturation. And at the beginning of this month of October, all federal entities that are lenders have to now base the mortgage that's being given to a new homeowner on a regular loan basis, not based upon a lower introductory rate and an option mortgage. And that's going to put a crimp in the what they call that kind of loan is a subpar loan, and that's going to kill a lot of those, maybe 50% or more, and that's going to stop them, the new borrowers, the new homeowners, from pushing people higher up the ladder who are above them. And once that takes place, and it's accompanied by a large amount of homes for sale, then the edifice begins to crack, particularly in the hot 30 markets, and the rest of the world follows. It's not going to be only the United States. It'll be Great Britain, Australia and New Zealand, France, Spain, Ireland. These were the real excesses that taken place. And also, interestingly enough, in some of the countries that used to be Soviet bloc countries, which are now entering the European Union, this is not just an American phenomenon. It's going to be a semi-worldwide phenomenon. And so that's the evolutionary process. We picked the top of the real estate market a year ago last June, and we were right. And I believe a recession began at the peak of the economy, the peak of GDP, in January of the first quarter of this year. And I've got to tell you, and you know this, Stan, we have been more right than all the economists put together. I mean, we've hit one home run after another, and evidently we got the rhythm of the whole thing. We got everybody out of the stock market in early April of 2000. Only less than 2% of all analysts and economists and newsletter writers did that. The other 98% were wrong. And you know something? The other 98% are wrong about real estate, and they're going to be wrong about the economy and the stock market. And that's just the way it is.
Well, now what's going to happen to gold and silver? Certainly those prices are down dramatically here recently. Incidentally, our number is 1-800-1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you'd like to talk to Bob, but certainly we've seen a dramatic cutback in certainly the price of copper, other commodities. Although I understand wheat is doing fairly well, but a lot of the commodities, certainly base metal commodities, are down, and gold or silver are really down tremendously. Gold is down almost 24% from its high when it hit $724 an ounce.
Well, as far as the commodities, the base metals are concerned, nothing has changed. There's tremendous shortages in zinc, copper, and nickel
too.
Nickel and uranium.
Right.
And that is not going to go away quickly. Even if the world slows down, it's going to take a year or more for it to slow down. And that's much dependent upon Asia, and particularly China. And so that paucity of inventory just isn't there, and it's not going to be there very quickly. As far as the precious metals are concerned, they've been manipulated, as they just tried to do with the commodity market as well. And we find that what the European central banks did was they held off their selling so they could hit the market in September, which is normally a very good month for gold and silver because of the usage for things for Christmas and also the other festive seasons in other countries such as India with the dowries and marriages and Diwali and other things. And this was deliberate because they wanted people to think that inflation wasn't a factor, because they keep on telling us it isn't, when in fact it is, because they are lying. And so to have gold and silver take a short-term tailspin fit into their program. So the European central banks, which have an agreement, sold a lot of gold. They have 500 tons for sale each year, and officially they sold 393. Germany did not sell because it didn't want to, and part of their allocation was used by others within the group, which they can do. But more than that, and there's a big to-do going on right now about this, is that other central banks are sellers as well. But they didn't do it in the bullion market. They used the forward market, and they tried to mask the fact that they were manipulating. Of course, that's now over. But the point is, they continue to try to do this. That's the fifth time this year that they have tried to knock down gold and silver prices and keep them down. Now, we know that this time they're doing it for the election. And after the election's over, they'll slowly start to move back up again. And then, bingo, sometime perhaps toward the end of the year, maybe early next year, gold will be back up, headed towards 730 again, and silver will be cruising towards $15. You're not going to keep these down as long as you continue to have inflation. And we've got plenty of inflation, even though the government lies about it. Inflation's going to get worse, not better. The wages are up 4% year to year, and this year, year to date, they're up over 5%. And that's going to continue for the next few years because people just can't make it. And with the diminution in the value of homes, they're not going to be able to borrow against them. So you're going to see tremendous pressure for higher wages, in spite of the fact of offshoring and outsourcing. And so we have a real impetus here in rising wages, which are very inflationary. And that reflects the corporations, too, because they have a choice. They either absorb the higher wages, which means lower profits, or they put them into the system, which means higher inflation. If they absorb those losses that they're taking to any extent and hurt their profits, the stock market's going to go south. So, like you said earlier in the program, they're darned if they do and darned if they don't. In every sector, that they're in that position. And Mr. Bernanke has taken a suicidal job.
Well, of course, I think that, you know, one of the interesting things that's happened in this last few weeks is the demise of so many of the hedge funds. And here were these wonderful investments. If you had $1 million, you could get into them. And, you know, they were giving 10, 15, 20%, you know, a return every year. And recently, they've some of them have lost over half of their value. One $12 billion hedge fund is down to $6 billion. And all the head of the hedge fund could say to the people who had lost half of their life savings was, well, I'm terribly sorry. So what's happening to the hedge funds? I understand a lot of them are simply biting the dust.
Well, they are. We lost I don't know the exact figures. I can't remember them, but I think we lost about 1,500 and 2,500 new ones were created. But that was last year. This year, it's about an even split. And there has been a move in Europe to outlaw them. And the reason there is no regulation at all on these hedge funds, no matter where they're harbored. And if they continue to do what they're doing, they're going to destroy whole economies.
Well, now, why would somebody with $1 million, you know, put $1 million into a hedge fund where you have really no protection? Is it simply greed? Is this what
drives greed?
Them?
You're absolutely right. It's greed. I mean, they just, it knows no bounds. And the richer you are, the greedier you are, unfortunately. And so I think the day of the hedge funds ending are coming, and it's we had things like hedge funds in the late 1920s, and they expedited the downside on the stock market and really compounded it. And at the same time, there many of those, they were called trusts in those days. Many of them were run by the banks. And the banks were also in the brokerage business at that time. And in 1933, they stopped those trusts, and they made the banks get rid of their brokerage firms. And that created a whole new venue of brokerage firms, but it stopped the banks from doing that again. Well, those laws were all changed back in the late 1990s. So the banks can now do what they were doing before. The trusts are now called hedge funds. And we're right back where we were in 1929.
And of course, it ended up with a catastrophe, and so many people invested their life savings, and that was the end of it. So I really feel very strongly that the average individual is not sophisticated enough to understand what's going on, and most of the people who are giving advice have a vested interest in it, and I have no vested interest in anything, and I'm not giving advice because I'm not a counselor. I'm just telling you, of course, what I think from a historical point of view, and I think Bob is doing the same thing. So, you know,
that's history, and you're not going to get that anywhere else. They're not going to tell you that in the major media because the whole media is controlled by the same people who run Wall Street, who run our government, and everything else. And, you know, you're forewarned. Get out and stay out of the stock market. And if you're stuck with a pension or a 401k that's in it, well, that's just tough. And don't plan on collecting on it because a good part of it may not be there.
Well, how about gold and silver stocks? Are they, or uranium or base metal stocks? Are they a pretty good bet? And what about oil at the present time? You know, oil has been dropping. Some people say it's going to continue dropping. Other people say it's going to go back up again. And those people who point out that it's going to drop are pointing to these great new finds in down in the Gulf. But we're talking about 3 or 4 years before that comes in. Why would they think because we have these new deposits in the Gulf that the price of oil is going to come down in the short term?
Well, the price of oil has been manipulated downward for political reasons. It's going back up again. And the reason why is the external extra funds that are available to the Gulf producers, the deal is that they invest a good part of that in U.S. Treasuries. And that's what keeps America afloat. And for that, we protect them. The countries that are run by these, quote, monarchies, are nothing but a gang of criminals who made a deal during and after the First World War, and that's how they all came into power. And you saw Lawrence of Arabia, and you also saw how the good people who were involved got the shaft. And that's why Lawrence quit in disgust. And it was just a, you know, a total sellout of the people there. But these people who run things are just a bunch of crooks. And it's as simple as that. And
well, I think the people, I think you're probably right. I think the gold is going back up. I think the stock market is going back down. I think that we're in difficult financial times, and I think most people, if they're not very, very careful, are going to get wiped out at this time. And so those of you who would like to have more information, I recommend the International Forecaster one more time. How can they get hold of it?
They can call 800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. And we'll be happy to send them a free copy, either in hard copy or by email.
Hold up. Well, Bob, you got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Right, in
well,
fact.
I think the elections are really going to be affected about this scandal that's going on. And I've been told by my sources that this is just the tip of the iceberg. There's all kinds of things in relation to that that have been going on in Congress and in the White House. And I was told today that there's a book supposedly coming out by Jeff Gannon, who is a male prostitute who visited the White House over 300 times overnight, that he's going to write a book about the inhabitants and the people who visited there. And if that book comes out and he's not suicided or plain murdered, then I think that American politics and the social fabric and culture of America could go straight upside down.
In fact, of course, many sick people think that Jeff Gannon is one of the boys that was part of the Franklin cover-up, and he was one of the boys who was kidnapped and taken to Washington, D.C. for the use of people in the White House. And the pedophiles, yes, ladies and gentlemen, they many times work right there in the White House. Certainly if Congressman Foley could have been for many, many years just preying on the pages. You get into, if those of you who are not acquainted with the story of the Franklin cover-up, I'm sure you are, Bob. It's a rather horrifying thing. And not only that, it involves many people of great wealth right here in the United States.
And, you know, that whole thing goes back into the 1920s and 30s.
And, of course, you need to go and know what goes on at the Bohemian Grove, where some of our world leaders are running around naked. If you haven't seen the video on the Bohemian Grove with a discussion of that by Alex Jones, we'd want to get Alex's video. We think it's so important. And of course, we have a four-tape set on the Bohemian Grove. You need to understand the total depravity of some of the people at the highest echelons of government. What we need in office are people who fear God. Would you agree?
Absolutely. Amen.
Amen. Well, anyway, our guest this evening has been Bob Chapman, the International Forecaster. It's always a pleasure having you, Bob, and we'll really look forward to talking to you here a little later this month.
Well, thank you very much. I love being on your program.
God bless you. Bye-bye.
God bless you, too. Bye-bye.
Okay, fine. Well, our guest this evening has been Bob Chapman, and, of course, we hope that many of you will, of course, heed his advice and begin making your preparations. There are ways that you can prepare, but if you do what everybody else does, you're going to lose. And avoid the hedge funds. Avoid anything that where your money is denominated in dollars. Annuities, bonds, CDs, things of that sort. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and those of you out there, you know, who listen to our programs, if you have not yet heard my talk on the financial tsunami, and, of course, there's a talk. You can get it on video. You can get it on DVD. Or, of course, you can get the syllabus that goes along with it. We recommend that. That's the tsunami special, financial tsunami special. But you need to have the information, and you need, I think, to remember the three rules in investing. Diversify, diversify, diversify. Don't put all your money in one hedge fund, or you'll live to regret it, because so many of them are going down, and I fear many more are. We have a wonderful little pamphlet we put together based upon newsletters I've written called The History of Money. Just The History of Money, it's inexpensive, but we recommend this. Of course, we carry the book, The Creature from Jekyll Island, the book, Fiat Money, Inflation in France, and Federal Reserve Conspiracy. Those three books, Creature from Jekyll Island, Federal Reserve Conspiracy by Professor Sutton, and Fiat Money, Inflation in France will give you an excellent overall view of what's going on. And then let me again recommend our talk and our syllabus, especially the syllabus, because you'll then have all the documentation you need for the things we're talking about, and you'll understand hedge funds and derivatives and M1 and M2 and M3 and all of these increments, which nobody's really going to explain to you. That's the financial tsunami syllabus. Now, once again, let me remind our listeners out there that we are putting on an all-day seminar here in the Monterey Bay area. It's on the 29th of October. That's the end of this month. It's a Sunday. It's the last Sunday in the month. And we're bringing in Constance Cumby. She's going to be coming from Detroit, Michigan. She's going to give two talks. And she's certainly one of the leading experts on the New Age and the World Occult Movement and Javier Solana. And I think you'll find her fascinating. I always enjoy Constance. And then, of course, we're going to have Chris Pinto, who produced the award-winning film documentary, The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning. And we're going to be serving lunch. If you're going to come, you're going to have a reservation. So give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. We're pleased with the response, but of course we'd like to see as many people there as we can. Tell your friends about it. I think you'll find it fascinating and the information you really need to have for times like these. Again, our telephone number, if you'd like to make a reservation, 1-800-544-8927. If you're coming from elsewhere, a wife, of course, will send you maps. We'll send you a list of the hotels here. And, of course, it's the Radio Liberty Seminar. Once again, we're trying to get support to reprint Dr. Dennis Cuddy's wonderful book, Secret Records Revealed. And if you'd like to get a case of his books on the same terms which we had when we published my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, why, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927, and we raise the support. Why, we'll go ahead and get the Secret Records Revealed. And we'd like to get all of Dr. Cuddy's books back in print. They're an invaluable source of information. And then, of course, we hope many of you go to our website of RadioLiberty.com. If you haven't read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, you should, or watch the DVD or video. You need to get our pamphlets on the occult hierarchy. The occult hierarchy that rules the world. You need to get the book, Hostage to the Devil by Malachi Martin, and actually he was a Jesuit priest, and you can get our four-tape set, my four interviews with Malachi, or the book, or get them both together, because this book, Hostage to the Devil, is one of the best introductions I know to the other dimension. We do still have copies of Constance Cumby's wonderful book, The Hidden Dangers of the Rainbow. We have a Pagan Agenda special. We'll actually take you into people who are in touch with the other dimension. We have the four tape sets on Satanism and deliverance. We have a book called The Diary of a Devil Hunter. We have a four tape set on the supernatural. All of these are available and so much more from Radio Liberty. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927 and understand we're involved in a spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization. And so please pray for America, pray for revival, but pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. Thank you.
No, it's okay.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Christian civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you of the views that are expressed here and not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views and of course, the views of our guest. And tonight our guest is Paul DeGuerra. Is that the right way to pronounce your name, Paul?
Yeah, that's correct.
All right, Paul DeGuerra. And Paul is with a 911, Santa Cruz 911 Truth organization. A group, anyway, they're looking into the background of what really happened on 9-1-1. Now, you must understand that this was the defining event for America. It was because of what happened on 9-1-1 that America attacked Afghanistan to capture the wicked Osama bin Laden. But then we didn't try to catch Osama bin Laden, and if you read the book we carry called Food Politics, which, incidentally, I've been told even the publisher doesn't try to distribute very well, I wasn't interested in getting it out, but he simply goes into the background of the Green Berets and the special forces that were over in Afghanistan wanted to catch Osama bin Laden, and they weren't allowed to. They sent in, he was trapped in the Torbor Mountains, and they sent in a group of Afghan mercenaries, many of whom supported Osama bin Laden. They let him escape, and why would you do something like that? Well, once we didn't catch Osama bin Laden, we had to have a war, so we attacked Iraq, because they had weapons of mass destruction, and when that didn't turn out to be true, why, then we said, well, it was because Saddam Hussein was an evil man, and nobody could question that, except we'd been keeping that evil man in power for many years and been financed him before the first Gulf War, and many people in Iraq really believed we'd kept him in after the first Gulf War. That's covered in a book written by a CIA agent, Robert Byrd, or we actually carry the book called See No Evil. So now we're trapped over there in Iraq and Afghanistan, and now we're talking about going to war with Iran, but it all goes back to what happened on 9-1-1. So, Paul, I'm going to let you get your thoughts out. What do you think, or what have you found? I mean, the government says that the 19 hijackers came to America and conspired together to actually destroy the World Trade Center and the building number 7 and to attack the Pentagon, and who knows what they're going to do with the other plane. Have we been told the truth? Is there any reason we should question? I mean, would the government not tell us the truth about what's going on?
Well, one thing I would start off by saying is that it was actually reported by the BBC that many of the alleged hijackers were reported live and well in other countries. So this is one question that we would want to analyze among many questions that are there in regards to 9/11. And the sort of main question that you always want to come back to about 9/11 is that, you know, we really don't know what happened to 9/11 in regards to 9/11. And although there are a lot of theories about what really did happen, the truth is that if you really want to know what happened, you would need a real investigation. And the investigation that was conducted by our government, which was the 9/11 Commission report, is really a cover-up, and it was really full of omissions and distortions. And this is well documented by a book called 9/11 Commission Report, Omissions and Distortions, by author David Ray Griffin. So this has also been very well documented.
All right, fine. Of course, we did have an initial investigation. That was the Joint Intelligence Committee inquiry. That was actually a report came out in 2003. Have you looked into that at all?
It's the intelligence inquiry?
It was the joint intelligence inquiry. Don't feel bad about it. I just happened to have spent a lot of time looking into that, and that also was a cover-up. The really important things from the testimony which we have, they never bothered to include in the report. Well, go ahead, pick up the story there.
Yeah, you know, one of the reasons why I'm on tonight is because I'm actually promoting a movie that my organization is showing. It's my organization is the Santa Cruz 9/11 Truth Network. I'm a volunteer, and we're showing a movie called 9/11 Press for Truth this Thursday at the Santa Cruz Veterans Memorial Building, and it's going to be at 7 o'clock Thursday evening by donation only. And this movie is really about the questions that were raised by the 9/11 widows. And what you will find out in this movie is that most of these questions were ignored or not answered properly by the 9/11 Commission. So what we're talking about here is not a few minor insignificant issues that were not answered or debated by the 9/11 Commission. We're talking about some of the major anomalies of 9/11 that were not investigated properly by the 9/11 Commission. And what the Santa Cruz group is fighting for, and what the national movement is also fighting for, that we are a part of, is a truly independent investigation. I mean, we had most of the 9/11 Commission members, they had, you know, some sort of tie to the Bush administration. So there were many reasons there for them to either ignore information or cover up information.
All right, fine. Well, what are some of the issues that are brought up in this movie that you're going to be showing that? Now, that's this coming Thursday evening at 7 o'clock at the Veterans Hall?
That's correct.
And is that there right next to the post office downtown?
That is correct. Yes, pretty easy to find. Also by the clock tower, which is another major landmark that's near the Vets Hall.
All right, fine. Well, of course, we have listeners all across America, but for the people here in the Santa Cruz area, I've actually seen some clips of the motion picture. I really would like to see the whole thing because the widows, the women who lost their husbands there, have a lot of very provocative questions. And, of course, they were the ones who insisted on another investigation after the preliminary investigation. What was so interesting about the Joint Intelligence Committee is that the testimony of Kristen Breitweiser and Mindy Kleinberg and even the testimony of Eleanor Hill was not included. Eleanor Hill, her material was excellent. She had really got into it. The fact that one of the hijackers had actually defected to the government and told them almost exactly what was going to happen over a year beforehand, and you never have read that in any report, either the 9/11 Commission report or the Joint Intelligence Committee report. And you have to ask yourself, why? Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Paul Daguerre from the Santa Cruz 9/11 Truth Movement and Truth Group, aligned with the national organization. And he was simply saying there is going to be a motion picture. It's going to be shown at the Veterans Hall here in Santa Cruz this coming Thursday. That's just 3 days from today. And that's going to be at 7 o'clock in the evening if you're interested in going. Why, of course, it's by donation only. Paul, what are some of the questions that are really being raised that have not been answered? I mean, certainly Thomas Keene and Lee Hamilton insist in their book Without Precedent that they did everything they could to bring out all of the information so people would know there was a fair and impartial treatment of the issues. But what are the haunting questions that nobody has wanted to ask or nobody's wanted to address? So what are some of those questions?
Well, one of the glaring questions would be John Ashcroft, I believe a former attorney general, at the time of the attacks, was shown that he was only flying by private aircraft from July through September, just prior to the attacks. And the reason that was given for this was a threat assessment by the FBI. Now, if John Ashcroft was warned, why weren't the rest of us warned?
Well, that's a very, very good question. And, of course, it's very interesting that the acting head of the FBI testified before the 9/11 Commission and actually before the initial investigation as well. But he said that he kept trying to tell John Ashcroft, the Attorney General, about the threat of Islamic terrorist attack, and Ashcroft ordered him not to tell him anymore. And then, of course, when Ashcroft was asked about that, he said, I never said that. So, obviously, one of them is lying, or are they both lying? Are they trying to get us confused? Why would the head of the FBI say that he kept trying to tell Ashcroft about the terrorist threat, and Ashcroft said that he was never advised, and then he starts flying on these special jets. We have to charter jets, and then even on this recent book that's come out, State of Denial, that Bob Woodward has come out, he's talked about the fact that Ashcroft was briefed, and then Ashcroft says he wasn't briefed. How can we get all these contradictory things? Or do you think they're just trying to confuse us, Paul?
I think that the issue you raised is true, not only for that scenario, but for a number or many different scenarios in regards to discrepancies about 9/11 in regards to the government's testimony. You can just see this time and time again. Another discrepancy we have is in regards to NORAD's response in terms of scrambling aircraft to intercept the hijacked planes before they would either hit the Pentagon or hit the World Trade Center. What you have there is mass confusion, and that has been released just recently. You can see that in the Vanity Fair article, and it was all over the news in the last couple months, I believe. That was made very apparent that there was much confusion going on.
Well, we'll take callers here. If you want to give us a call, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. For our listeners who have not read the Vanity Fair article, it's September of 2006, and it simply goes into conversations with the gentleman who was in charge of NORAD, the headquarters in New England at that very time, the one who dispatched the planes from Otis Air Force Base into New York City, and at the same time they actually asked the people at Langley, which was about 150 miles, to send planes into to protect the nation's capital. Now, what the most amazing thing is, in a nation that spends $400 billion a year or more for defense, there were only 14 armed jets in the entire country that morning. And certainly there was actually only two at Langley Air Force Base, none at Andrews Air Force Base, just a couple of miles from the nation's capital. And there were two at the Otis Air Force Base. And those at Langley, instead of being set, they kept them on the ground because they were afraid if they went into the air, according to the article, they would run out of gasoline. So they said, or fuel, or whatever. I guess they used a jet fuel. And the excuse was given, well, if we put them up in the air, they probably would have run out of fuel. And so they didn't send them up in the air. In fact, when they finally were forced to mobilize them, they sent them out over the Atlantic Ocean at subsonic speeds. And yet, of course, talking to Air Force pilots, they tell you, if you're getting low on fuel, you just put a call in for a tanker. The tanker's there. You get refueled. You don't have to land to get refueled. So why would they lie about that sort of thing?
Well, you know, that's actually interesting to me that you would say that. I have not yet heard the excuse that they were going to run out of fuel. And to me, that just seems like one more excuse out of many, many excuses that are out there. And ultimately, what was going on was complete confusion. Nobody knew what they were doing, and nobody knew what they should be doing. Even though there are standard procedures in regards to intercepting aircraft. Now, I want to make your listeners clear that about 99.99% of the time, we're talking about 9/11 being the exception. Every time that there is a plane that is in a situation where they need a jet scramble to intercept it, it happens within minutes. And I believe the number of times that this has happened in 2001 alone, prior to September 11th, I believe it was around 67 times they needed to scramble aircraft, and they did it in a very punctual and effective manner within minutes. So we have to ask the question, why was 9/11 the exception? And if they're giving excuses about confusion and mass chaos in the control room, we have to really ask more questions and really get down to some concrete answers and not just some, you know, random statements that tend to blow us off, like, well, we were just too confused. I mean,
Were they confused, Paul? I think that is the important thing that nobody has addressed. In fact, it's only recently been in the last 6 to 9 months. We find out that there were military exercises that morning. In fact, there were a number of military exercises, and at least one of them involved hijacking a plane by terrorists and crashing into an American building. But they were actually inserting false images on the screens at both FAA and NORAD, simulating these hijacked planes. And even long after American Flight 11 had actually crashed into the North Tower, it was sending out messages as if it were on its way into Washington, D.C. But and this is all in Chris Nett's article in Vanity Fair magazine. I mean, obviously, wasn't it clever of the hijackers to pick the very morning when we had all of those exercises and most of our fighter planes that were supposed to be guarding our nation's capital in Washington and New York City were off on exercises in Ganders and Canada and Alaska, and they'd sent our fighter planes all over the rest of the world. Why would we do something like that if it's really a threat, and they knew there was a threat of hijacking?
Yes. What we have to understand about 9/11 is that there was truly remarkable coincidences that were happening this day. We had military aircraft that were being sent off to Canada, I believe, and what we had on 9/11 was, I believe it was actually more military exercises happening in one day that had happened in years. So we had an incredible amount of military exercises happening this day. And also, like you said, one of those exercises was, showing an exercise of planes running into the World Trade Center towers. And also keep in mind, a year prior to 9/11, we had the Pentagon running exercises of a plane hitting the Pentagon, and there are photos of this that are widely available on the Internet. And so going back to 9/11, what we had was the confusion arose out of these military blips that were on the radar screen. And the military blips that people were looking at were, some of them were looking at radar blips that were of the exercise. They were actually false radar blips of pretend aircraft. And some of them were meant to be real aircraft. And what you had was the fighters could not tell the difference between the false radar blips and the real radar blips that indicated a true aircraft. So what we have to ask ourselves here, and this is the crucial question, is that we had people within the FAA, within NORAD, who knew this was a hijacking from very early on within the attacks, and yet we had the attacks being carried out within a span of 2 hours from the moment we knew about the hijacking to the moment of one of the last crashes. We had a span of 2 hours. Why wasn't the drill canceled? The drill would have been canceled, the false radar blips would have been taken off the screen, and instantly we would have known the real planes from what would have been the imaginary radar blips.
Yeah, that's a very, very good question. We've got, Rich calling from Santa Cruz. Hi, Rich. Did you have a question?
Yes, I was just curious why your guest was saying 9/11 and you're saying 9/11.
I think it's just we're talking about the same thing. I mean, 1-1 is simply is 9/11. So, any other question?
Well, how would you say, for instance, April 13th?
Yeah. Well, what does that have to do with anything specifically?
Well, it just seems that somehow it's connected with the emergency. Somehow, the fear factor is built into the 9/11.
All right.
I think it's just all part of the conspiracy.
Well, maybe. There is a plan, I believe, to play games with our minds. As Edward Bernays had said so well, the father of modern-day propaganda, you know, our minds are molded, our ideas suggested, our tastes suggested, our ideas suggested largely by men we've never heard of. But thanks very much for calling. Rich, anything else you want to say?
Oh, what really convinced me that it was... inside job was Building 7 coming down and then Larry Silverstein saying, pull it.
I think that's a very, very good point. Thank you so much, Rich.
Thank you.
Okay, fine. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening is Paul DeGuerra, and we're talking about, of course, the program that's going to be held this coming Thursday at the Veterans Hall. And, you know, I understand you had a recent program at the Rio Theater. You showed the film The Loose Change. I understand you had almost a sellout crowd there.
Yeah, I'm really proud of this in terms of it being an event that was put on by the 9/11 Santa Cruz 9/11 Network. You know, prior to this event, we had mainly done smaller events at the Vets Hall, and this was, I believe, was really our first large event. Although I've only been with the group for about 9 months, you know, you go from the Vets Hall in Santa Cruz, which is really about a 200-person venue, maybe less than that, to selling out the Rio, which is about 650. And so we felt really good about that night and the amount of people we were able to affect with some great information on that evening.
And so, I think that more and more people across the country know that something is seriously wrong. And I think one of the most important things available now are the videos that are up on the Internet, specifically at Google. And you can Google in Building 7, or Building 7 videos, and see the building coming down. And basically the base of the building sort of collapses, and the building comes down from there. It's not the upper floors that are collapsing, other than the roof, but, you know, then it's almost like the base of the building simply explodes.
Yeah.
I think you only have to watch it a few times to realize that we have not been told the truth why Building 7 came down, because it wasn't hit by a plane. And they kept saying, well, it was hit by falling debris. Fine, then the top of it should have caved in. But why would the base of the building give way if something hit it on the top?
Yeah, key thing to keep in mind when you're looking at this video is that the speed at which it falls, there is virtually no resistance when it's falling. And in any sort of collapse, it doesn't matter what the cause of it, outside of controlled demolition, that is, there would be at least some form of resistance from the lower floors in regards to the upper floors coming down on them. But as you said, the lower floors basically collapsed first, which is very strange. It just raises a lot of questions.
I think anybody can just watch that video a few times and realize that this is some sort of a controlled demolition. And, of course, if there's a controlled demolition, then the explosives were in the building ahead of time. So let's go to Ray, who's calling us from Santa Cruz. Hi, Ray. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. My question was revolved around Condoleezza Rice. Now, they had a national security meeting a couple months, 2 months before 9/11, and they were discussing how there was a threat by Al-Qaeda to blow up the World Trade Center, and then she apparently lied about it?
Well, you're speaking, of course, of the book called State of Denial by Bob Woodward?
Yeah.
All right, fine. Do you have any comments on that at all, Paul?
Well, I haven't read the book, and I don't have a direct response to that comment, but what I can say is that the government at least knew that the World Trade Center was a target. It was attempted to have been blown up in the 90s, and you had several strange things that were happening in the weeks prior to 9/11 and also the months prior to 9/11, and we can get into that later if you'd like. And so what you have to look at is, with all these different questions, I'll give you one quick example. You had some insider trading. You had some put options on American Airlines, which means betting that the stock is going to fall.
Oh,
you had a large number of those.
Hold that thought there for just a moment, Paul, as we bring our stations on board here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. We have with us this evening Paul DeGuerra from the Santa Cruz 9/11 Network, and of course he's talking about the things that he's concerned about. We had Ray calling from Santa Cruz, and Ray was asking about the meeting that's described in Bob Woodward's book, where George Tenet was just so concerned about the fact that, that there was going to be an attack on the United States that he called a special meeting, and of course Richard Clark was there. Condoleezza Rice were there. There were three or four other people who were there. And Tenet is telling Rice that there's going to be an Al-Qaeda attack on America. And all shucks, Richard Clark forgot about the meeting, and Condoleezza Rice forgot about the meeting, and even though the 911 commission knew about it, they didn't bother to put it in their report. And George Tenet, the head of the CIA, he declares war on al-Qaeda back in 1998, I think it is, well, the second time Osama bin Laden declares war on America. And Tenet is telling everybody that we're at war, that the terrorists are going to attack us, but nobody ever hears his warning. And all the other people said, in the FBI, said, we never heard about it. You have to understand, George Tenet was the head of the Defense Intelligence Agency, in addition to being in charge of the, and being in charge of the CIA. And he is the most powerful man in intelligence in the country. And he's telling everybody we're at war with al-Qaeda, and nobody hears his message. How could that possibly be? And how could Condoleezza Rice forget the meeting that's described in Bob Woodward's book? Or is this all part of a program of planned confusion to create cognitive dissonance in the American people? And, Ray, I think that that's really what this is all about. Well, they're trying to confuse us.
They call these things, what they call them in the jargon, they call them black ops.
Right.
They're black ops. They're the same thing with the Kennedy assassination. It was a black op. It was planned, you know, by somebody, but they call them black ops.
Right. Of course, the thing is that, there's no way that this thing could have happened without George Tenet and know what was going on. And remember, immediately after 9/11, President Bush didn't ask George Tenet to come to see him. He went over to see George Tenet, and he congratulated him for a job well done. Why would he congratulate, George Tenet for a job well done when there are almost 2,700 Americans dead? I mean, what good a job was that?
Yeah.
Any other question, Ray?
Well, that's about it.
Okay.
Thanks very much.
I appreciate your calling. But an answer to the question that Ray has raised, I think, is very important. When you get all of this conflicting information, understand that it is being done intentionally to confuse us. Now, Paul had mentioned of the trading, the illicit trading of the putts that were taken out on the Morgan Stanley. They were taken out on J.P. Morgan that had offices there, on United Airlines, on American Airlines. And would you like to develop that idea, Paul?
Yeah, in the days before 9/11, there were approximately four times the amount of put options put on these stocks than is normally placed, and that is, again, betting on a stock will lose. Obviously, when you have American Airlines, United Airlines slamming into the World Trade Center, and also agencies within the World Trade Center that are now gone, those stocks are going to fall as a result of the attacks, and that is what we saw. People that put money on these put options made money. And so when you have four times the normal amount of put options being placed on a stock, and again, this happened in the days prior to 9/11 on these stocks, companies that we just mentioned, normally that would raise a red flag within the CIA or the FBI, and they would take a look at this, analyze this for a possible threat, and take the appropriate action. And this is one example out of many examples of warnings, and these were very specific warnings in relation to the World Trade Center and, again, these airlines, that people within the administration should have taken a hard look at in terms of a threat to our country.
And what's so very interesting is that that issue is addressed in the 9/11 Commission report and in the book Without a Precedent, written by Tom Keene and Lee Hamilton. And in that book, they said, well, we looked into it, and we found that there was nothing abnormal at all. And they didn't tell us who the people were who were doing the putts. They didn't tell us how they came to the conclusion that there was nothing abnormal. They just said, we looked into it, and but what nobody has ever pointed out is that Lee Hamilton just happened to have been a member of a secret little organization known as the Trilateral Commission from 1992 at least to 2002, and a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. Thomas Keene just happened to be a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. Actually, five of the 10 commissioners came from the Council on Foreign Relations, and the man who directed the entire 9/11 Commission was a man named Philip Zelikow, Zelikow, Philip Zelikow, a member of the Council on Foreign Relations, a former advisor to Condoleezza Rice. Do you think he was really impartial? Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. We were just talking about the strange coincidence. There are almost 300 million people in America. There are 4,000 members of the Council on Foreign Relations, which is an organization which many people feel is the most was one of the two most powerful organizations in America. Isn't it interesting that both members of the Senate Intelligence Inquiry back in 2002, both of the co-chairmen, one from the House and one from the Senate, just happened to come from the Council on Foreign Relations, and that 5 of the 10 members of the 9/11 Commission came from there. The man that President Bush chose to head it was Henry Kissinger, who was a member of the CFR, but also a member of one of the 130 members of the Trilateral Commission. When they couldn't get him in, they put in Lee Hamilton, who was a long-time a member of the Trilateral Commission. Remember, there's only 130 of these in the entire nation, at least for the North American contingent of it. A nation of 300 million, why wouldn't they get people maybe who might be impartial at looking at this? Why would they get elitists who might have a vested interest in not telling the American people the truth because they have another agenda? And nobody has ever mentioned that 5 of the members of the 9/11 Commission, Thomas Keene, Lee Hamilton, Jamie Gorelick, John Layman, and Senator Robert Kerry, all came from the membership roles of the Council on Foreign Relations. Could that happen by accident in a nation of 300 million people? What are the chances of that happening by accident? I think they're pretty slim. Have you ever heard that discussed, Paul?
Specifically, I do know that the commission was basically connected to the Bush administration.
Right.
In general, yes.
And, of course, the Bush administration is simply an extension of the power elite, which comes from the CFR, the Trilateral Commission, and these elitists who have a different agenda, who are really intent upon getting us into war, because that's how you change society. War changes society. And, boy, our society is sure changing. Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you'd like to talk to Paul. Paul, what are some of the other things that you're concerned about?
Well, I would say I'm concerned about everything that any level-headed American is concerned about, and that is sort of the things that we're concerned about in the post-9/11 climate that we find ourselves in, which is obviously another terrorist attack. I'm very concerned that if there is that there might be a terrorist attack, and that we're not necessarily...
Hold that thought. We'll be right back in just a moment here, Paul. Well, as Dr. Stan and Paul was saying, he's concerned about the possibility of another terrorist attack here in the United States, but we don't know really why the first attack took place and how those hijackers should have been so clever that they would have planned on the very day we were having all the military exercises that were designed to confuse the air traffic controllers and the people in NORAD who should have been launching planes, only the planes weren't there. They were all off on exercises someplace. And that fact has been suppressed for the American people for almost 5 years. How could they have suppressed that information for so long, and it's only recently coming out now? Go ahead, Paul.
Well, what you have to understand is that Bush administration did not want answers to these questions from the very beginning. The Bush administration resisted the formation of the 9/11 Commission for 441 days. If we want to relate that to similar events that were created investigations in our country, such as Pearl Harbor, the JFK assassination, and the space shuttle disaster, these investigations all started within about 1 week. So the Bush administration pretty much put their foot in the ground from the beginning and did not want this. But what we have here, and I'll plug our film here really quick, which is about the Jersey Girls. These are four of the 9/11 widows who were a big part of this movie that we're showing, they really pressed the government to answer these questions and form a commission. And although they didn't answer much of the questions, as we'll find out, it did pressure them enough to form the commission.
Well, I think they're very, very courageous people, and I hated to see Ann Coulter attack them viciously as opportunists. Here, four women have lost their husbands who are doing everything they can to try to get the truth out about what really happened. And incidentally, if you go to my website, radioliberty.com, you'll find Kristen Breitweiser's testimony there and Mindy Kleinberg's testimony there. And these are two of the Jersey girls, two of the four widows. And they're really touching. We actually reproduce them in our monthly newsletters so that they'd be available to you. And you can go up on the Internet and certainly go to Radio Liberty or just type in Radio Liberty and Kristen Breitweiser or Mindy Kleinberg and read what they have to say. And, you know, these are women who are trying to get the truth out. A lot of Americans would like to forget it. Let's just move on is what they're going to say. But we can't move on. We have to get the truth, because if we don't understand what happened on 9/11 and who was really responsible for what happened that day, I fear we're going to be involved in a genocidal war with Iran that could lead to the very destruction of this nation that we both love. So I think what you're talking about is it's so vitally important. And I really appreciate you and the people you're working with, Paul, and the people out all across America. Now, I hope you realize, of course, that the CIA will have people actually working in your organization to try to throw you off the track or give you all sorts of false information. It's a standard technique. They've done this over and over again. But do you know that one of the highest officials in the U.S. CIA is quoted in a book we carry entitled See No Evil? And the book is written by Robert Baer, who, in fact, the movie, George Clooney's book, Seriana, was actually based upon this book, See No Evil, which we carry. And in that book, Robert Baer quotes one of the highest CIA officials as saying, off the record, of course, that when the dust finally settles after the American people will realize what happened on 9/11 was not a failure of intelligence. It was a triumph. When the dust finally settles, the American people will realize that what happened on 9/11 was not a failure of intelligence, but a triumph. And I bet you've never heard that quotation.
No, I haven't, actually.
All right. Well, the book actually here, let's see how close I was. When the dust finally clears, I'm quoting now from it, Americans will see that September 11th was a triumph of the Intelligence Committee, not a failure. And that comes from from the book, See No Evil by Robert Baer. How could you actually suppress that information in America unless there is an organized effort to keep the American people from knowing what's really going on?
Well, there is such an effort, I would say, an incredible effort to keep the American people from the truth. I would just point to the most obvious example, and that's if you turn on the mainstream media, very rarely will you see them address these issues. And if they do address the issues, they're usually labeling a person that would be asking questions as a conspiracy theorist, even though all that person will most likely want to do is ask a question and investigate further. And now you want to compare that with what's going on in the Internet. We have pretty much come to terms with the fact that I would say over 50%, and it's probably a much higher number than that, of people who are regular users of the Internet who have a connection pretty much tuned into 9/11 truth. There is an explosion of information that you can find there, and then this is just being suppressed by the mainstream media. It's so easy to find if you just go online and do a search, though. It's really quite incredible.
I think it really is, too, and I think we can be so grateful for the Internet. And you just have to learn who you can trust and who you can't trust, because I have people who email me information all the time, and I know that they're disinformation specialists. I have other people I know and I trust, and I just hope that they are very careful of where they get their information from. Well, anyway, we have Mike calling us from Santa Cruz, and so without further ado, hi, Mike. How are you doing?
Yeah, hi, Stan. I had a quick comment and then a question. One was about the rate of fall of Building 7. Apparently there's at least one good study that says it came down faster than the speed of free fall, which I didn't believe at first, but I think it's so interesting. If everybody could just go onto Google Video and type in 911 eyewitness. Now, there's a filmographer named Rick Siegel who had himself an excellent vantage point across the river from the World Trade Center in Hoboken, and they did a detailed analysis of the rate of fall of all three of those buildings, and they came up with the analysis of the just a few fractions of a second faster than free fall was the way the Building 7 came down, and the explanation for that was the explosives that were placed inside the building created a very low air pressure inside and in the building and in the immediate area surrounding it. And the air pressure is one of the factors in any study of physics regarding free fall, and since the air pressure was lower, the building could actually come down faster. Another point of proof for the fact of the explosions, the explosives being used. And that's 911 eyewitness. It's on Google Video. Anybody in the world can go look at it right now. But my question had to do with the security contractor for the World Trade Center and the change that took place. I think it was roughly 2 months or so prior. Maybe Paul knows some detail about that for us.
Do you know anything at all about that, Paul?
Well, one thing I do know for sure about 2 months prior was that the leaseholder of the World Trade Center had traded hands, and this was the first time this had happened since, I believe, since the World Trade Center was built. And there's some very fishy stuff in regards to that as well. But in regards to your direct question about the security, I'm not sure about the two-month time frame, but I do know that it was actually the president's brother, Marvin Bush, who was secured in charge of security at not only the World Trade Center, but at Dulles Airport, from which one of the hijacked flights originated from. So that seems very suspicious.
Well, it certainly is a strange coincidence, let's put it that way. And whether there was something there, whether they'd given up the a contract or they just got the contract, but somehow Marvin Bush is associated with certainly with his security there, the firm that is responsible for security there at the World Trade Center. And the other thing that's so interesting is apparently there were actually military plans for these exercises on the day before. In fact, they were actually bringing people down to New York in preparation for this this military exercise. And some of those people, they were there on the evening of the 10th of September so that they would be ready to go to work on the 11th of September. And lo and behold, we had 911. Isn't that a coincidence? But, you know... anything else you want to say, Mike?
That's pretty much it. Thanks. Great program tonight, guys. Hey,
thanks very much. You know, one of the things, Paul, I try to stay away from what happened at the Pentagon. I try to stay away from what happened in Pennsylvania, although I have ideas, but I stay away from it pretty well. I usually stick to Building 7. I stick to the magic passports, because anybody who knows the story of the magic passport, the one that somehow was able to get out of the pocket of the one of the hijackers of the plane that hit the North Tower, get out of his pocket, and they get out of the flaming wreckage of the plane he was in that was engulfed, and you know, and then of course get out of the World Trade Center and float down gently onto the pavement, where it was picked up about a block and a half away from the World Trade Center and turned over to the police. And of course, it's one of the things that the government used to identify one of the pilots there, or one of the people there, one of the hijackers. This plane. Now, if you believe that story, you've got to be incredibly naive. And the same thing happened at the Pennsylvania crash site, where one of the passports somehow got out of the pocket of one of the hijackers, and out of the flaming wreckage of the plane, and survived the explosion there, and that just left a big deep hole, and actually, you know, very little wreckage there at the crash site, just a big deep hole. And then, of course, they even posted that passport up on the FBI webpage for a few days, and then for some reason they took it down again. You have to ask yourself why. But how those two passports could have survived, the chances of that, I'd say about 1 in 150 trillion or something like that. What do you think, Paul?
The chances are very low.
And so either that or somebody planted those passports. And if this, they were planting passports, that it was disinformation, and somebody knew who was supposed to be on those planes beforehand. And I don't think it was Osama bin Laden who planted the passports. And if it wasn't Osama, then it's got to be somebody in one of these black op operations. But nobody wants to address that issue. And then, of course, the third issue I address is the military exercises that morning and the fact that our planes were sent away. How could Osama have been so clever that he planned the hijackers' attack on the Friday when they had the most military exercises they've ever had? It just somehow doesn't make sense. Okay, well, we got Jack who's calling us from Michigan. Did you have a Jack? Did you have a question?
Yeah, actually three, Dr. Stan. Where did the indestructible orange-black boxes ever go to?
All right, fine. Well, let's just take them one at a time. Paul, Jack is asking from Michigan, he's calling, what happened to the black boxes and why weren't they found? Oh, Paul, I guess we lost Paul. Let's see if we can get Paul back again. I'll ask our producer to call back again, and maybe we can get Paul back on. I don't know what happened to him. But anyway, Chris Jack is calling from Michigan. And as far as I know, they claim they weren't found there. Somebody wrote a book saying he was there when they were found. And so one of the men who works there says they were found, and the FBI says they weren't found. Who are you going to believe?
Dr. Stan, one day I heard an announcement that a fight broke out between the firemen and the police. And I can only imagine, perhaps, firemen being forensic evidence people, at least higher up in the chain of command, perhaps did, in fact, recover the black boxes. And some suspicious persons, perhaps in the Federal Bureau of Insurrection, might have attempted to confiscate those.
Well, we just don't know, Jack. But all I know is that there's certain people who don't work for the government who say they were found, and we find that sometimes what we've been told by officials really isn't true. So that's the first question. What's the next question?
Well, yes. Wasn't the plane wreckage debris in Pennsylvania a debris field that matched a plane that would have been missiled or blown up in the sky, as opposed to a jet that just crashes into the ground and maybe has a debris field of a mile and a half?
Yeah, so it was, my understanding was over about an eight-mile area. So certainly something happened, and we've not been told the truth.
And the third question, you mentioned before, I think, Dr. Stan, that there were FAA recordings.
Oh, I'm sorry, we lost Jack. Jack, if you want to call back again, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. We got Paul back, and we lost Jack. Anyway, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, and if Jack would like to call back, we'll be glad to put him on. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And Jack was simply talking about the recordings. We have some sort of recordings that the government claims were recorded on the plane, but then can we really believe what we're told? I mean, is it possible that they are withholding evidence, or they would doctor evidence, or simply withhold evidence from the American people? And there are lots of questions out there, aren't there, Paul?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, again, when you talk about the fact that the Bush administration was against the formation of the 9/11 Commission from the very beginning, they're pretty much against having to answer any questions with, in regards to 9/11 and just sort of move on with their war on terrorism and not really have a public discourse about that and a debate about whether that is the right thing to do, I think that speaks volumes about this administration.
But, Paul, why is it that they don't want the truth to be brought up? Why is it that they seem to be so intent upon getting into war?
Well, what you have to understand is that the wars were basically planned before 9/11, and this is something that this administration wanted to do before 9/11. You have to understand that there was a group called the Project for a New American Century, and this is sort of a conservative think tank. In the September of 2000, they put out a document that said, in order to further their agenda of Middle East conquest, which is what they wanted to do in order to achieve their political goals, it would be necessary to have a Pearl Harbor-type event to garner the American people's support behind their war effort. And this statement came out from their group about a year before the 9/11 attacks, and the people that were a part of this organization called the Project for a New American Century includes people like Dick Cheney and Jeb Bush.
Well, of course, now where can people get the information on the subject of the Project for the New American Century?
I don't know the exact website, but I would just go ahead and do a Google search for Project for a New American Century. And basically, their information is widely available on their webpage, which just go ahead and search for it, and I'm sure their homepage will come up right away.
It's www.newamericancentury.org. The document that Paul is referring to is called Rebuilding America's Defenses. Came out in 2000. The membership list included Dick Cheney, Donald Rumsfeld, John Bolton, Paul Wolfowitz, a man named Liddy, Elliot Abrams, Gary Bauer, who's to control the conservatives, Frank Gaffney, who's to control the conservatives, William Bennett, who's to control the Catholics, and, of course, Norman Potteroats, who's to control the Jewish population. Well, Paul, I'll give you 3 minutes to wrap up the program this evening.
Yeah, absolutely. I would like to address the local Santa Cruz crowd to come out and see 9/11 Press for Truth at the Santa Cruz Veterans Memorial Building right by the post office and the clock tower downtown. And this is going to be Thursday, October 12th, this Thursday at 7 p.m., 846 Front Street, by donation only. No one's going to be turned away at the door. And for those of you not in Santa Cruz, you can view the trailer and find out more information about the movie at 911pressfortruth.com. And also, to find out some of the more interesting information about 9/11 on the internet, go to 911blogger.com. That's blogger.com. Not only is this website a great website, but it has tons and tons of different links. Some of those links include 911truth.org is another really good one, and st911.org, and that is scholarsfortruth911.org. And also, the more local website we have here in Northern California is sf911truth.org. That's for San Francisco, 911truth.org. And again, my phone is just about to cut out again, so I think that pretty much wraps it up on my end.
All right, fine. Well, Paul, I want to thank you so very much for being with us. It's a real pleasure. Appreciate everything you're doing. And just our job is to try to get the American people to think and to question and to use the good God, mind that God gave them, because if they don't, we're going to lose America. And if there are enough people who really care, we can save America. It's just that simple. Thank you for what you're doing.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me on.
Good night, and God bless you. Okay, well, that was Paul DeGuerra from the Santa Cruz 911 Network, and part of this network all across the country, 911 Truth Network, and they're really out there. These are young, probably very, very liberal people. But, of course, they see or are concerned about what's going on. This is not a liberal or conservative issue. It's an American issue. And I don't care whether you're a conservative or a liberal, a Christian, or an agnostic. The important thing is we get the truth of what happened that day. Because if we don't find out the truth about what happened on 9/11, we are going to be drawn into a war with Iran. Our word is that the minesweepers and submarines and other ships are on the way to the Persian Gulf, and they are preparing for some sort of a military adventure there. And I have a terrible feeling, of course, that this is going to create terrible problems here in America. And our job is to do everything we can to prevent it, and if not, at least to let the American people understand the betrayal that is at hand. We'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I hope you enjoyed the program this evening, the discussion with Paul DeGuerra. We let him go, of course, but of course, if you're in the Santa Cruz area, why, Thursday evening at the local Veterans Hall. And if you're out across America, go up on the internet and simply Google in building number 7, video, things of that sort, loose chains, watch them all. and ask yourself, do you honestly believe what you've been told? And if you, of course, they have interviews with William Rodriguez, who was in the basement of the North Tower, and I've actually talked to William Rodriguez, and of course he will tell you that you know, before the building was ever hit by the plane, there was an explosion in the basement, and there was some matter raised up in the basement. I mean, badly scalded, covered with burns from the massive explosion in the basement before the plane ever hit the North Tower. How could that possibly have happened? How did Osama bin Laden arrange that? And there's so many other things. Certainly the firemen who heard the explosions, and they keep saying, oh, they don't know what they heard. But what happens is they put pressure onto people, and they threaten them. And just as Professor Stephen Jones from the Brigham Young University, who's a professor of physics there, has been threatened and has been put on indefinite administrative leave. Why? Because he dared to threaten the official party line. And, of course, we talked just last week to a Mr. Chavez. We hope we'll have him with us tomorrow evening. But he was in the military, and he will tell you that on that very morning, he saw evidence that they knew about an attack coming on the World Trade Center. And, of course, he wrote a letter to the local newspaper in Cincinnati where he lives, and of course, he's been threatened since that time. And he lost his job, and this is only within a week to 10 days, and yet he had the courage to come forward. And I'm sure there are other people out there who have information, and we need them to come forward as well. Because, of course, what's at stake is the very survival of America. If you have not yet read the three pamphlets that we have, $4, 911, let me suggest that they are available through Radio Liberty. $4, 911 should be a summary of my newsletters. A great deal of great information. Dr. Dennis Cuddy's book, Cover Up. I mean, did you know that there were children in New York City who came to school on the morning of September 11, 2001 with cameras so they could take pictures of the attack on the World Trade Center, but were told the FBI had no idea, no inkling the attack was going to occur? Do you really believe that? How could those children have been so much smarter than our intelligence agencies? Or maybe we've not been told the truth. What we have to understand is we're involved in a spiritual battle. There really are spiritual forces at work within our society. There really is organized evil. There are people who are totally unconcerned about the death of 2,700 Americans. It was supposed to be 6,000, but they didn't do as good a job as they anticipated, and a lot of them escaped from the South Tower, where they were repeatedly ordered to stay in their seats. You know, after the North Tower was attacked and they wanted to leave, and many of them got up and left and started to leave the building, they were ordered to go back to their seats. Why would they be ordered to go back to their desks when the North Tower was under attack? Well, fortunately, the man in charge of security for Morgan Stanley raced up and down the aisles with a megaphone saying, ignore what you're told on the loudspeaker, get out of the building, we're under attack. And he saved 2,500 people. A very courageous man who himself perished in the building when it collapsed. And it, what a tragedy, but we owe it to them to bring the truth out. We owe it to the people who perished to bring the truth out. We dishonor those who perished if we don't try to find out what really happened that day. And what we need is an independent evaluation. You need, of course, to see how some of the material Alex Jones has put out. Specifically, you need to see the American Scholars program that was on CNN. You can get it from Alex. You need to get the information, American Scholars Symposium. And then please remember our number, 1-800-544-8927. Remember, we're having an all-day conference here on the 29th of October. Hope you can come. Pray for America. Pray for revival. Please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. Thank you.
Afternoon. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, wherever you're situated on this great, big, beautiful blue globe floating through the void of Jan's creation. It is Monday, the 9th of October, 2006. And you know what, folks? I've been asking the question for so long, where's your line in the sand? But it just occurred to me, a lot of folks don't know